CliffCentral.com. All right, it's an all-male crew this morning with the exception of poor Amanda. My buddy is not here this morning, but justice is. Justice Malala, the burning platform. It's brought to you by Nando's. All right, what dangerous territory shall we wade into first this morning? There's a lot to talk about. Justice, can we start with something that came up in my interview with Jacques Po?
Yes.
He said he's concerned. There's ample evidence that Jacob Zuma doesn't understand numbers.
Mm-hmm.
He said, when Malusi Gigaba says to him, we can't afford nuclear, it's a trillion. He doesn't know what a trillion is.
Doesn't he?
I don't know. This is what he's saying.
I think he knows it's a lot of money.
I think he knows it's a lot, but I don't think he knows if it's that much more than a billion. Or, you know, maybe because he's never really been good at handling his own money. Let's start with nuclear, because a lot of people are hearing mixed messages from government. Malusi made that very famous comment now where he said, no, nuclear is off the table, we can't afford it. Now we got a new energy minister who's really moving fast. Hey?
He's moving like greased lightning.
Right.
Say.
So this David Mahlobo, he says, no, we've got to do it now. Yeah. It's the only way.
Yeah. You mentioned Jacques Po and you mentioned nuclear power. So can we segue a little bit and talk about last night?
Of course.
For those who don't know, there was a massive book launch. Jacques Po's book was launched just last night at Hyde Park in Johannesburg, and the lights went out. I think about 1,000 people had turned up for this thing. So we've had some extraordinary book launches in South Africa this year. The book about the woman who alleged that the president had raped her, who was treated very shabbily by the courts, by the justice system, Fezeka Khuzwayo. Written by Ridi Tlhabi, was launched about 2 months ago, a month and a half ago. And that attracted about 800 people to Hyde Park. The interest in reading is quite something. Then you had Jacques Po's book last night, and the lights went out. So it's an interesting thing for me that the lights go out at a major shopping center. In fact, probably one of the richest shopping centers in South Africa.
And I know they have generators, and I've never heard of the power going off.
They have two generators, and the power didn't kick in. Those generators didn't kick in. Now, every major shopping center in South Africa, after what happened with the load shedding of 2008-2009, have massive generators which are kept pretty much serviced and kick in whenever there is something like this. But this time, that didn't work out. So you had Jacques Po signing books by cell phone light last night.
Well, I see that there was a tweet from Andilem Gritama yesterday at 3:40 in the afternoon. Said the following: BLF is organizing a nice surprise for the author of The President's Keepers. Nice little one.
That's interesting. I wasn't aware of that particular tweet. But that tweet speaks to something that when it did happen, everyone on Twitter, on all sorts of social media was saying, there goes the state security agency trying to bring down this book again. You'll remember that last week what they did was to send quite a nonsensical letter saying he must stop distributing the book. Now, 20,000 copies of that book had already been printed and sold, many more on electronically via Amazon Kindle and so forth. So the key question for me, well, the key thing for me about this whole thing is that you now increasingly have a populace that doesn't trust government. You have people like us in this room sitting there saying, oh, you know what happened in Hyde Park last night? The lights went out. Who did it? And we immediately think it's the state.
Sabotage.
It's the president. Yeah. It's sabotage. Now, there aren't many people. I'm sure there's one or two others thinking, oh, no, it must have been Eskom or City Power and so forth. In fact, Kulu Phasiwe, the Eskom spokesperson, said last night that, no, ask City Power. We don't have anything to do with distribution in that area. So for me, it's about public trust in the state, public trust in politicians, public trust in our institutions. If no one believes that that was a total coincidence, an accident happened, something went wrong, and Hyde Park didn't have power. If everyone starts believing that the state is malicious, is malevolent, is naughty, can go to the extent of turning the power off for Hyde Park just to stop a book, we are in dangerous ground here. Because what else do people think? So if there's riots going on, people will begin to see the state as their enemy. In the 1980s, public trust in the state, in the system, in politics, was so low that if you'd come to me as a young kid in the 1980s and said, oh, Justice, P.W. Botha says education is going to be the same for black kids as it is for white kids, I would have laughed at you because I had no faith that you think that guy would do that. They'd never do that. So turn around now and say to Sia, oh, Sia, you know that Jacob Zuma will not fiddle with state coffers, will not steal money from you. He's going to start laughing uproariously. You're a good comedian, Justice. You're funny. You think Jacob Zuma won't touch some of that? You see what's happening here is that...
Yeah. And you know what the end game is, right?
The end game is it's horrific to even contemplate.
I don't know so much. I kind of like the idea. I'm starting to really warm to the idea that we might just have to collapse the state completely.
But you see, for me, that we've come to a point where we think the incredible, amazing stuff that you've built. Remember, we've built something here. It's not perfect. In fact, it's got many problems. But from nothing in 1994 to adopting a constitution in 1996, a constitution that many people say, wow, this is the best constitution in the world, to building some incredible, amazing institutions. Think about what SARS used to be. People in South Africa used to make money in the 80s, in the 90s, and take that money out so that SARS won't see it.
Mm-hmm.
In the 2000s, you have Pravin Gordhan comes along and people say, wow, this guy is amazing. I love him. He's the hero of the hour. That's a great institution. The Constitutional Court. We are saying now that things are so bad that we are prepared, we're ready to collapse those amazing, beautiful things.
I don't think SARS is amazing.
Used to be.
No, but, even then, because they were taking your... I mean, it's thievery by decree. No, I think what we're realizing more and more, and this is maybe a 21st century thing that we've never been able to think about before, because we think of the state as such an achievement. I don't know that we need it.
Some parts of it were a great achievement.
I would rather we could run things at a local level.
I hear you. But
I mean, you probably are in charge of your own...
my own security, because if I call 10111, they'll take an hour to get to my house.
Right.
If I call the local security company, they'll be in my house in 2 minutes. So right. Who am I going to choose? So in you're right that I have outsourced the state. I don't go to Baragwanath Hospital. I have private medical care.
Right.
So the state has walked away from a large chunk of what it should be or why I'm paying taxes to them. But I hear you there. However, I do think that to a large measure, it is a sadness for me that we have reached a point where I am so cynical about Jacob Zuma and what he's done to the state. I'm so cynical about even his intentions. I don't think he sits there saying, I'm going to do good things for the people of South Africa. I think he sits there thinking, I'm going to steal them blind, make sure that they can't catch me. And if I think they're going to catch me, I will install someone else who I like in that office, or I'll run off to Dubai. That is how sad things are. And so you expect the worst from your public representatives. You expect them to actually send spies, underground operatives, to turn the lights off just to stop Jacques Poe from speaking. It's shocking and it's scary in the extreme.
Well, David Mahlobo is Minister of Energy, so he might even have had something to do with it. Who knows? And he was certainly the Minister of the SSA before then.
Indeed.
But now he's into this Russian nuclear deal. And that was where I started. But I'm glad that you brought up the Jacques Poe thing, because he's our interview at 8 o'clock this morning.
I'm looking forward to that, by the way. When Sia told me, I got very excited. There's been so many developments since the book was so spectacularly launched by running articles in the Sunday Times. And I think what happened last week with the attempt by the State Security Agency and the South African Revenue Service. And let me just say here that those are two institutions that Jacob Zuma has comprehensively captured. Tom Moyane, the head of SARS, has overseen an institution that has basically been run into the ground. The State Security Agency, as Jacques Poe points out in that book, is so plagued by corruption, by all sorts of things, and we don't even know about it, and we can't know about it because they say, oops, sorry, it's strategic national information that you can access. So, you know, we all owe a huge burden, a huge thank you to people like Jacques Poe who shine light on these things. If it wasn't for them, and people need to realize this, if it wasn't for people like Jacques Poe, Stefan Brumert, Ama Bungani, Sam Soul, those kinds of journalists, we'd be in huge trouble in this country.
Well, thanks to people like that we knew about the Gupta's landing at Watercliff Air Force Base.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And none of this would have come out, because while all of this was being planned by the president and his cronies, we were none the wiser.
Exactly. So, all of us need to do something and think deeply about how we can participate and help those kinds of institutions. Anyway, you were on nuclear.
Mm.
Nuclear is interesting for me because there were two things that happened. On Sunday, Jacob Zuma speaks at an O.R. Tambo Memorial Lecture where he mentions in an hour of speaking, he mentions O.R. Tambo once. O.R. Tambo was the ANC leader who took over from Nelson Mandela because Nelson Mandela had been sentenced to life imprisonment on Robben Island. He was ANC leader for nearly 30 years. People adore him. People think his leadership qualities and all sorts. And, you know, you can have debates about that, but people adored O.R. Tambo. Jacob Zuma in this lecture on Sunday then starts banging on about, you know, the Russians are friends. In fact, the apartheid regime dismantled the nuclear program in South Africa because the communists were going to take over. What I found interesting was that, one, Jacob Zuma was part of the negotiating team for the ANC in the 1990s. He wasn't one of the senior people, but he was certainly a second layer, and he was in those ANC meetings. Now suddenly he's repudiating his own party's organization stance that, in fact, what happened in the 1980s and 1990s early was that the ANC had always stood against nuclear weapons, not nuclear power. So when the apartheid government, with the edging of the ANC and the United Nations, said we must dismantle the nuclear weapons program, it was the ANC that wanted this. So first of all, he turns around and says, you know, this is racism. They didn't want the communists, and this is ideological. They didn't want the communists to take over, and we are the communists. It's Guy. Your own organization. In fact, he has stood before the United Nations and said all sorts of things about, we want a nuclear-free world, a nuclear a weapon-free world.
Right.
We don't want Kim Jong-un's running around the world threatening each other, or Donald Trump's running around the world threatening other people. So first of all, he's dissembling. He is dissembling hugely about this. But it becomes clear that he wants nuclear power, and he wants nuclear power from Russia, because he keeps on going on about communists as if we're still living in a Cold War world. He goes on about we mustn't forget our friends, and our friends are my best friends are the Russians at the moment. So that's at the bigger scale. At the lower scale, on the same day, David Mashobo gives an interview to the Sunday Times in which he makes it very clear that he's pro-nuclear, and he wants the processes around nuclear to be done very quickly.
Yeah.
And the paper reports that his officials had aimed to have an integrated resource plan by February, but he wants it now by mid-November. It must be done and dusted, and it needs to be actioned.
Such a lot of pressure.
Such a lot of pressure.
And for a man who's happy to sit on his hands for much of the time as president, he seems suddenly very motivated.
This is an action president. But what is going on here? Why? So when you start connecting the dots, the reports by the Sunday Times that David Mashobo and President Zuma have been to Russia, that a Russian delegation came to South Africa and put pressure on Jacob Zuma, the closeness of Vladimir Putin to the president of South Africa, the visits by Rosatom officials to South Africa, the pressure that they put on someone like the former energy minister. Remember, you've had three energy ministers this year. So who's that lady who famously had that picture? There's a meme of it.
The teacup.
Tina
Jumat Peterson. So she was the first one who signed that deal with Rosatom, and it was haven't signed with them. Sorry. But we had signed with them, in fact. And it leads to one conclusion, all this activity. So Tina Jumat Peterson she signs, and then you're not delivering. Then she's kicked out. Then Mamoloko Kubaya comes along, and she's young. She's in the job for 6 months. It's like, no, you're not delivering. Get out. I'm going to bring my own guy who I know delivers and delivers all the time. Boom. And David Mashobo is in there, and he's working like a demon. He works like someone who's just come out of a Thai massage, and, it's all energized and all that. So, I mean, our brother is working here. He's working hard. So, we've said this before, and I think it's worth saying again. South Africa is on course to procure nuclear power and to procure nuclear power from the Russian state. That's what it looks like. Malusi Gigaba is interesting, because I think he's like the guy who arrives at National Treasury, and it's, oh yeah, the cash is in there, and so forth and so forth. Suddenly there's SAA, there's ESCOM, everyone wants a guarantee or wants cash, and there's no cash in the safe. He goes to SARS and says, show me the money. They say, oh, this year we're going to have a 50 billion rand shortfall.
Mm-hmm.
He suddenly realizes that actually, if you want to spend money, you've got to have money to spend. You can't just go on spending money you don't have. So he's starting to actually become a finance minister, if you read his medium-term budget policy statement. He becomes a finance minister in the sense that he says, guys, you got to have some cash if you want to spend some. So someone comes to him and says, we need a trillion. As you say, Jacob Zuma doesn't understand what a trillion is, but maybe, I don't know if Mashobo does, but so it's going to cost a trillion. So Finance Minister Malusi Gigaba says, no, you can't have a trillion. That's a lot of money and we don't have it. And they start looking at him askew and say, oh, Baba, but we've been friends here. We make you finance minister. What's going on?
Right.
And I think he said no. He's saying no to all sorts of things, to SAA, saying, I want more money. And it's like, get rid of Dudu Mieni first.
Sure,
if Malusi Gigaba continues this way, he must realize that Nhlanhla Nene was fired because of this same nuclear build. He was fired because of SAA, because of Eskom, because of not wanting to open and use money that you don't have. He must realize that
it's going to go badly for him.
It's going from being someone implicated in the Gupta leaks. Actually, if he continues to be a real finance minister or making noises along those lines, he's going to be out. I'm telling you, this guy is going to be reshuffled in a few months' time because Jacob Zuma wants the nuclear deal.
Sure.
And none of his team can go around saying, oops, we don't have cash. And if he says we have cash, the ratings agency are going to say, where's the cash coming from?
Yeah.
And so he's in a bind. Malusi Gigaba is young. He's 46, I think, this year. He wants to become president one day. He can't afford to make big, big mistakes where it's, oh, that's Sia, the man who bankrupted South Africa, who inherited a 27% debt to GDP from, what was his name, Trevor Manuel, to now, by 2022, it will be 60% debt to GDP. So, he's going to try and be a real finance minister. And what's going to happen there is sure. that he is in big, 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 big trouble. So there you go. Nuclear's coming.
Hmm. All right, everybody's talking about December. And everybody's talking, about, not because of the holidays or Christmas or the usual things, it's because of the ANC conference. And there's slate politics taking place, which gets slated by the ANC. It seems Cyril's the only one who's brave enough to say, these are my people, this is my team.
Yeah.
We've heard rumors about who Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma's slate is, and I got an anonymous tip-off about who her top 10 or 15 is, if you want to hear them just now.
Yes, please.
But before we get to that, let's first look at Cyril saying, Naledi Pandor for deputy president.
Yes.
This is important. These things are not just symbolic, because the people on your list, it's your statement of what kind of an administration you want, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So why Naledi?
That was quite a left field whammy, really. Not many people expected her. A lot of people have respect for her. The younger crew, you know, Sia and people like that, only remember her because she's the lady who Julius Malema dissed. Back in, I think it was in 2010, when he said, that one, she must use her
fake American accent.
Yeah. Now, you know, she's got a very posh British accent. Ah, say, old chap, pass us the scones. So she's highly...
Do you want to hear him?
If we've got a minister who's spending too much time using American accent without assisting our people, that is the main problem. Let the minister use that fake accent to address our problems and not to behave like a spoiled minister.
Sure, remember that.
Oh, Julius and the ANC Youth League. He was quite fiery, Julius, then. Yes, that was quite something. He did write a long letter groveling, apologizing for saying that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
As he used to do all the time, Julius would say something and then he'd apologize the next week. He doesn't do that anymore. He's matured quite a bit. Anyway, so she's a bit of ANC royalty herself, a bit like Lindiwe Sisulu. Her grandfather was one of the great ANC leaders of the 1910s, 1920s. Zatke Matthews, an educator and all sorts of other things.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had an Oxford degree. Then her father was Joe Matthews, who was in the ANC structures in the 50s, 60s. He was a lawyer. He surprised people in the 1990s when he came back from exile and dumped the ANC and joined the IFP. He became the deputy minister of police for quite a long while under Nelson Mandela, and he did all sorts of other things. She has always been a very staunch ANC member, studied overseas, largely in Botswana and the UK, and came back and became all sorts of held all sorts of
education, science, technology.
Yeah, that's where she's always played a role. And so, you know, in the ANC, she's highly respected. She's always been one of the top 3, 4, 5 ministers who are elected onto the NEC of the ANC. But she's not someone who comes with a constituency as in, oh, you know, the ANC Women's League will come in with me, or, you know, the KwaZulu-Natal province wants me. She's one of those sort of ANC intellectuals and a sort of moral authority, if you will.
There are few and far between.
There are few and far between. And to be honest, you know, I'm loath to say, to use words like that, like she's a moral authority in the ANC, in the sense that, you know, these are people who stood by, who folded their hands, their arms, while Jacob Zuma went on an absolute rampage over the past 12 years. So to actually say, there are very few of those. You're absolutely right. But anyway.
But perhaps in a way, because she doesn't have a constituency, it isn't just pandering to women.
Exactly.
Or to, you know, the old ANC or any of that stuff. Mm. In some way, it's almost an individual endorsement.
Yes. So in a way, Cyril Ramaphosa, it's astute because it says, I will have people around me who I believe will do the right thing, and I will appoint them not because they bring me the ANC Youth League.
Mm-hmm.
I'll appoint them because I think that they'll do a fantastic job by me. And I think as a sentiment, as a message, it sends all the right signals. However, in the divided slate politics of the ANC at the moment, it means that those who won that position of deputy president or some other position in the ANC will think hard and say, there is nothing for me. The gravy train stops now because this guy wants people like Naledi Pandor. Naledi Pandor said about 2-3 months ago that she believes that there needs to be a lifestyle audit of ANC leaders, because why is it that she lives in a 4-3-bedroom house and can't afford more, and yet people who earn the same or less than her are living in a mansion in Hyde Park, in a mansion in Bryanston, in a mansion in some fancy suburb of Cape Town? What's going on here?
She makes a good point.
She makes a very good point. And if you are Duduzi Manana, for example, and you arrive in court, you're an MP, by the way, or you're a deputy minister, and you arrive in court in a tinted window Mercedes Benz plus your Gucci suit and so forth, one must ask, wow, this guy has a lot of money. Where does it come from? Because he's a minister who earns 1.3, 1.8, I don't know how much, and surely he can't afford this sort of thing. So
you know, they all have to show it off, eh? If they were clever, they would just carry on living their lives, pretending they don't have money and building that Swiss bank account up.
But this is
they can't help it. They have to show everybody.
Yeah, it's very sad. It's sort of Cardi B money. I've got something. Let me show you that I've got the money. It's very sad. It's a brokenness almost that I have to flash the cash.
But can I just come back to Naledi for a second? Because since Cyril's put out his slate, and you say that for a lot of people that represents, oh, well, there's no opportunity for me there.
Mm.
What is Didi Mabuza thinking? Because he's the guy, you've said before, he might be the kingmaker.
This, you see, what that announcement does is put this race back into very maybe exciting, maybe scary footing, because Cyril Ramaphosa has essentially said Mpumalanga is probably the most corrupt or one of the most corrupt provinces in this country. The stories we've heard over years about Mpumalanga and about Didi Mabuza's administration, make you scared. I mean, there have been reports that, oh, you know, 14 million rand was found or was stolen from his house. It's never been verified and all those sorts of things. So if he has rebuffed Didi Mabuza, Didi Mabuza is sitting there saying, what is my role in the ANC post this conference? Perhaps I should go back. Perhaps I should go and chat to Nkosazana again. He remains on that slate as the number two until I've heard about your new slate, because it seems to change every night. But yours came in, it's the latest one from yesterday. So that might give us some idea of what kind of tactical deal he's making. But he is holding 736, I think, delegates. And Mpumalanga is interesting because it is quite a united province, unlike the Free State or the Northwest. It's not like as contested as all that. So if he decides, well, Zweli Mkhize is not going to win and Cyril has chosen someone else, then he is left with one option, and it's the NDZ, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma option. And if he does that, then we have a serious issue on our hands, because you've got KwaZulu-Natal still in. So basically you have the old Premier League back in play, and that Premier League is the Northwest, the Free State, Mpumalanga, and KZN.
All right, so here's what I, again, yes, this could be unfounded, it's complete speculation.
I like your list. Right, I like
so,
your list.
Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma for president, right? Deputy President Didi Mabuza, National Chairperson Natim Tetwa, Secretary General Ace Magashule, First Deputy Secretary General Jesse Duarte, Second Deputy Secretary General Phumulo Masualle, Treasurer General Maite Nkwana Mashabane. Additional members, I'll just go to number 10. Number 1, Baleka Mbete. Number 2, Zweli Mkhize. Number 3, Lindiwe Sisulu. Number 4, Bathabile Dlamini. Number 5, Fikile Mbalula. Number 6, Malusi Gigaba. Number 7, David Mahlobo. Number 8, Tina Jumat-Peterson. Number 9, Siyabonga Tshwele. Number 10, Jeff Radebe.
Now, that is a very... first of all, I mean...
And interestingly, number 11, Naledi Pandor.
Yeah. So Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, you can see in that list her intentions after December 20. And it will be, I want to avoid a split of the ANC. So that top 10, if you take out your Fikile Mbalulas and so forth, is essentially a, how do I keep these people in and not have a split of the ANC.
Right.
Because I can tell you now, there are many people who believe that if Nkosazana wins, there will be a split of the ANC. And we've seen it before. 2007, Cope, immediately after December 2007, in 2008, Cope was born. Immediately after 2012, the EFF was born. So, That top 10 is interesting for that she's already thinking, how do I bring in Baleka, who's lost, Jeff, who was a player, Zweli. So all the people that I'm rebuffing in my slate, I'll keep them in and I'll give them probably cabinet positions as well to keep them sweet and to keep them inside. The second one is that top seven. Well, they've expanded
top
it
seven.
To top seven. Now, that top seven is an interesting one because it says, how do I win? Phumulo Masualle is in the Eastern Cape. The Eastern Cape is cleaved right down the middle. So if you want to make sure that Cyril, who commands the support of the winning ANC leadership there, you make sure that Phumulo Masualle and his branches, and that's about 40% basically, of the Eastern Cape, you make sure that they have a skin in the game. And if she gets 40% of the Eastern Cape and Cyril is only getting 20% of the of KwaZulu-Natal, she's winning because she's eating more into the Cyril slate than he's eating into her slate. Zweli Mkhize is no longer chowing anywhere. Sorry, it's Jessica Nkosi. It's no longer chowing
the money.
He's with David Mabuza and the unity ticket conversation gone. There is no longer a Zweli who is disrupting that the Nkosazana game. And so, increasingly, if I take the 4,700 delegates, my calculation is that she's at about 53-54%. That slate would give her the Mpumalanga province because DD is number two. And they are definitely giving David Mabuza the number two position because they are begging him to come in with them. And so, actually, as a chess game and as a Jacob Zuma chess game, it just gives you a win. So what DD does over the next week is crucial, and it will change the game. And that game will be the only way that Cyril then would win would be that have some way of collapsing the conference, which is something we've said about Jacob Zuma in the past. If Jacob Zuma wasn't going to win it, he'd collapse this conference. But at the moment, if and that's the big thing, the next week, Sia, hell for leather, take Gareth to Mpumalanga. I know he loves Nelspruit, the center of the world. So much fun. Take him to Nelspruit and get him to interview the man who holds the ANC election in his hands, and that's DD Mabuza.
There's so much to talk about. Can we get, because we've got a little bit of time left, can we talk about Gigaba and the SARS investigation that he wants to start?
Yeah,
What's going on there?
Yeah, no.
Especially in the light of what we see in Jacques Poe's book, all about how SARS has just lost all its investigative capacity.
Exactly.
All of it.
Absolutely. It's an interesting one because Malusi Gigaba, one, knows that SARS cannot do its work anymore, so it fails to collect taxes from people. So 50.8 billion rand shortfall in his medium-term budget policy statement. But SARS has now become a joke. It's a joke because every day something happens there, some scandal, and it's an institution that doesn't look like it knows what it's doing. So he then goes to President Jacob Zuma and says, I want to investigate what's wrong at SARS. He speaks to Tom Moyane, I apologize. Tom Moyane, and Tom Moyane says, yes, I will cooperate. Mm-hmm. He goes to President Zuma. President Zuma says yes. Now, that makes me very suspicious because the two people who are implicated in the destruction of SARS are President Jacob Zuma and the man he appointed as SARS Commissioner, Tom Moyane. And Malusi Gigaba believes that he'll appoint a judge who will get something from those two. So I spoke about public trust in the institutions earlier. Already there is no belief, there's no trust, certainly from where I'm sitting, in this process. Secondly, Mr. Tom Moyane has been seen having coffee with Duduzane Zuma. Mr. Tom Moyane used to be a family friend of the Zumas in exile in Mozambique. He has spoken about babysitting Duduzane when he was a child in Mozambique. At the heart and core of the accusations about SARS is that Tom Moyane is somehow implicated in the Gupta family's dealings with the state. You will remember that there were allegations that he released a 72 million rand VAT payment to the Guptas when SARS officials were saying, this looks suspicious, let's hold back and have a conversation with these people. Never happened. There are big questions now, and Jacques Paul has raised them, other people have raised them, about what taxes need to be paid by that family, given the monies that they have taken out and in and out of South Africa, say for example with a Vrede dairy farm in the Free State,
right,
and the money going out then coming back and being used for the wedding in Sun City. So I think Malusi Gigaba, I think one needs to be careful about what his inquiry will do, and how and who the judge is who is appointed. The Seriti Commission of Inquiry into the arms deal was totally discredited, and it was run by a judge. Why? Because it dragged its feet. It was seen as a whitewash, and many people, I believe it was a whitewash. It didn't even scrape the top of what was going on. It didn't even ask questions of Jacob Zuma, who is implicated in those, in taking bribes from Shabir Sheikh for arms deal work.
Right.
So, you know, Malusi Gigaba may say he's trying to do the right thing, but it's not obvious from what we're seeing.
It's scary, the stuff we see happening around
it's,
us.
It's quite, because it's like, a, I mean, I'm so waiting for an interview with Jacques Paul, because I think it's Wild West stuff. You sit there and you say, what's going on here? The stuff about the state security agency. People stole a billion rand just to buy themselves cars to stash it away and so forth and so
and
forth.
And properties that they then leased back to the SSA. Now, Justice, I mean, we our daily bread is this burning platform, right?
Mm.
So when Jacques Poe has been working on this book for some time and he's got lots of sources, and I asked him, is there stuff that you didn't put in the book because you didn't have enough evidence to substantiate it? And he said yes. He said there's other stuff that he's still gathering evidence on that could be as explosive as anything in this book. That's scary.
That is scary. So if you read a book like this and you say this is the tip of the iceberg, what the iceberg must be, you know, I mean, it's a, you don't jump out of the ship. You just inhale something that's very bad for you, because it's quite something. Anyway.
One last thing. Who's in charge of the fee-free higher education movement at the moment? Who's been put in charge?
You probably still have friends who are still at university doing their MAs and PhDs and stuff like that. And many of them probably participated in the Fees Must Fall movement. And that led to President Jacob Zuma appointing a judicial judge Hierha, to listen to all inputs and come up with a report on whether it's feasible or not. That report was handed to the president. He's been sitting on it for months and months. Blade Nzimande, a good friend, didn't get a chance to read it, although he was the Minister of Higher Education. He kept on saying, Mr. President, I hear that the report is ready. And Mr. President, I'm here. I'm the minister. Give me the report. Let me read. And he never got it until he was told, get out of your office and leave now. And so he left. It turns out, so Ranjini Munisamy, Kwanita Hunter, and another journalist at the Times managed to get this report, and publish a story yesterday, saying that, lo and behold, President Jacob Zuma has called a young man, 28-year-old graduate of the University of Johannesburg, who happens to be his future son-in-law. I don't know how work out that young people won't dump each other. But anyway, this young man is going out with President Jacob Zuma's daughter, Tudukile. His daughter with Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. And this young man, it turns out President Zuma has put in charge of implementing fee-free education in South Africa.
Essentially his erstwhile son-in-law.
Exactly. Now, first of all, you have Treasury who have to work out if government is going to pay for my education, your education, our young's education. There are massive financial implications. It means that Malusi Gigaba has to redraw the budget for next year. He has to find however many billions that he has to find to pay for that education, because they will no longer, your friends will no longer be paying for their university education. But the president doesn't go to Treasury with this. He says, my son-in-law has a plan, and so my son-in-law will work on it. It's extraordinary, the detail in this story. So the ANC top six, President Zuma says, we'll have a PowerPoint presentation. And ta-da, this young man arrives and does the PowerPoint, and he's got a solution for it. So at the process level, as the president of the republic, here you are giving possibly the most divisive, the most important work of the new South Africa, education. You're giving it to your son-in-law. No tender, no appointment, no rigor about how does this work, how does this happen. You just do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm bringing my daughter in next week, guys. She's taking over the morning slot.
Yeah. And I'm going to go with it.
I'm good here, you know. So that's the first thing. This sort of thing is like, it's like Robert Mugabe, you know. Robert Mugabe, if you go to Zim and you fly in on Air Zimbabwe, and I don't recommend it, Ben. I really don't recommend it. But if you have to, you fly in on Air Zimbabwe, they have one plane. And the CEO of that business is Robert Mugabe's son-in-law. Everything that goes wrong is because of this sort of stuff, where people are in jobs because my dad is so-and-so, my mom is so-and-so. It's shocking. Anyway, so at the moment, we don't know if we're going to get fee-free higher education or not. But that story puts a whole new spin on why it's taken so long for the Hiha Commission report to be released. And why it hasn't been released. But if indeed it turns out that Jacob Zuma, and I believe journalists, by the way, I always believe journalists because they turn out to be right. So my money,
a lot more than politicians.
Exactly, you know. So if it's true what we've read from those journalists, I will tell you now, it's a very low point in our post-apartheid politics, and we've entered a very dangerous place where essentially the state is run by the Zuma family and not by the people of South Africa or the ANC or the elected leadership of South Africa. Jacob Zuma is allowed to make all kinds of mistakes because we elected him. But when you now have the Gupta family, the sons-in-laws, the daughters-in-laws running the state, that's a coup. That's a coup d'etat.
Someone says, the idea of the state is starting to sound a lot like an old granny who needs her license taken away for everyone's safety.
Yes, please.
That's a message that we just got now. Justice, thank you.
Absolute pleasure.
The very, very impressive burning platform for today. There's always news, and we check in with Justice once a week to get his analysis of what's happening in the politics, the economy, the social scene, the entire, what do you call it, the polity of
the
South
polity.
Africa. There we
yes.
go. Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure.
Good, we'll see you next week. CliffCentral.com